Iran's capital, Tehran, has been host to a forum called the Tehran Dialogue Forum. It's themed to push regional friendship, attended by nearly 70 officials and representatives of think tanks and research centers from 36 countries. The focus was on the policy of the Islamic Republic towards its neighbors and its approach to friendship and trust building. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at Iran's policy initiatives and how the region and the world can actually benefit from the enhanced relations between Iran and its neighbors, minus the presence of the U.S. in the West Asia region and without Israeli interference.
About 70 officials and representatives of think tanks and research centers from 36 countries are in Tehran to attend the Tehran Dialogue Forum 2022. The initiative, dubbed Neighborhood Policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, is the third of its kind, and this time it focuses on regional friendship and trust building.
The main message of this forum is boosting regional cooperation and dialogue. We always welcome dialogue, particularly when it comes to finding solutions to the challenges that we face.
The keynote speakers of the forum, former Iranian Foreign Minister Kamal Kharrazi, the former Prime Minister of Iraq Adel Abdel Mahdi, the Nicaraguan Foreign Minister Denis Ronaldo Moncada, and other participants reiterated the same stance, giving Iran credit for the initiative.
This is important in order to strengthen your policy in the regional dimension due to the new dimension in the whole world and new world order that is much more focused on regionalism than as on the wide international arena.
Pakistan and Iran are the only two countries that are always directly affected by Afghanistan. So I think the Tehran Dialogue Forum is very important in that regard, that there has to be regional dialogue. And Iran being at the forefront of this is a welcoming development. And I think, look, it's important for the region to take ownership. And we see Iran doing that through this forum. And I think it's important, again, to discuss through dialogue to move forward towards any cooperation.
The message of the forum, however, is not limited to regional countries.
We can only really build peace if we do it through dialogue and with the diversity of participation. So I think we are grateful for the invitation to Venezuela, and we think it's important to address this. Even though we're not from the region of Iran, we also think in regional terms. Venezuela is part of Latin America and the Caribbean. We are a zone of peace, as we decreed it in 2014. And we think that it is important for the different regions of the world to establish communication and see how we can really face common challenges.
The first and second rounds of the Tehran Dialogue Forum were held in 2019 and 2020. And as always, addressing the latest developments in West Asia will be on top of the agenda.
The discussions of the Tehran Dialogue Forum 2022 will continue in four different panels, focusing on regional security, energy security, the Ukraine crisis, and the prospects of peace in Afghanistan. Izumi Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
Time to introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Mohammad Ali Araki joins us. He's a journalist and political analyst from London. Also joining us, Said Mohsin Abbas, journalist and political commentator, who also joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Said Mohsin Abbas, I will start with you and ask you about the necessity for this Tehran Dialogue Forum in the first place. Taking a look at the platform in terms of what it says, I'm going to put it in a short format so you can elaborate more for us. Platform of interaction and communications among political officials and thinkers. which focuses on the West Asia region in particular. Do you think that this is a forum that is necessary, of course, with Iran being the host?
I think it's one of the most necessary initiatives for that West Asian region that there could possibly be, because, of course, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been an advocate of peace and regional security since the revolution, without a doubt. I mean, just some examples to show the history of Iran's engagement, this persistent history of trying to create peace in that region. The Hormuz Peace Plan, which was an initiative of the previous government in Iran, which aimed at establishing security, you know, in the region, including the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, and the Sea of Oman. And that initiative was planned to be with the participation of all countries of that region. And that's been really the foreign policy stance of the Islamic Republic. That's the default one. The trouble is that the presence of Israel and the foreign presence of America, because, of course, it's not part of West Asia, it's a perennial interference in that region, and its manipulation of some of the people within that region and some of the leaders particularly has led to essentially nothing but war, conflict, and plunder and pillaging. This is just on record. We only need to look at the record they have in terms of what they're doing in Palestine as far as Israel's concerned, what they did in Syria, what they've done in Iraq. All of these initiatives, which were, a partnership of the Anglo-Zionist Empire, have led to nothing but instability in the region. Iran has always advocated the opposite. In fact, they could argue that it's because of the Islamic Republic of Iran that a lot of these fires that could have turned into huge destruction in that region have changed into far more settled, or at least on the way to settling disputes and conflicts. You know, Iraq is one example. Iran's influence there has led to less sectarian, confrontation. It's led to the destruction of ISIS, which would have been a nightmare for everybody. Sure. In Syria, we've seen that the sovereignty of Syria was ultimately maintained to the best of the ability, and that was largely due to Iranian backup, I would say. And of course, we can see also for the rights of those oppressed in the region, where of course you can't have peace without justice. And I think Iran has stuck to that that mantra as well, and that policy of saying, look, we need justice in this area, and for that, we need to all settle our issues in the West Asian region if we happen to be living here, not allow foreign powers, superpowers, to come in and dictate their agendas, which are usually based on their self-interest, economic interests, and, might I add, the destruction of Iran primarily and any other Arab or Muslim nation in that region that wants independence.
Sure. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned this Hormuz peace endeavor, of which Mohammad Ali Araki, I'm going to ask you, this was something that was introduced by the former Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. And it was years ago that he presented that. Actually, he went to the UN with it and talked about how this initiative to bring peace and stability, especially in the Strait of Hormuz and the Sea of Oman, is key. But he underlined that this can only be achieved through cooperation and dialogue without foreign interference, and that the regional countries must decide that on their own. Again, this would be in reference to only the two that Mohsen Abbas mentioned, which first and foremost would be the U.S., and maybe along with that, Israel. Years ago, why didn't that have the momentum required? Because we are still experiencing this foreign interference in the form of the U.S. in the region.
Yes, so the interference of the United States of America alongside the apartheid Zionist regime of Israel has been in the region in the past few years, but we have witnessed that, especially since the presence of President Ayatollah Raisi in the Islamic Republic of Iran. He has taken the path down a state of resolving things. We have witnessed a far more diplomatic activity by his government to resolve the problems and end the foreign interference. I personally believe that the meeting that will be happening soon has a big influence in the peace that will come into the region, because the neighboring
countries... I'm sorry, can you tell us which meeting you were referring to? I didn't catch that.
Yes?
Which meeting are you referring to, the upcoming meeting you just stated? I didn't catch whom you were referring to.
by the meeting that will be by the Persian Gulf countries. They'll be coming, and Mr. Amir Abdullahian, he spoke about it today. There'll be a summit, and based on what I read, it will be taking place in Iran. Now, I believe that the neighboring countries of the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially the Persian Gulf countries, will reach the conclusion that Iran is a true friend for the days of hardship and the good days, and they'll realize, and we can see the change, that the apartheid regime of Israel and its allies are not that true good friend that has always been portrayed on the media. And we have had the different leaders of resistance focus on the fact that, and refer to it, that this normalization of the ties between Israel and many Islamic countries, it's not going to last. I believe this meeting will be a turning point, and it will be a start for the situation changing, and we will be having more peace, hopefully, in the region. And as a result of that, the United States of America and its allies will have to pack up their suitcases and leave the region.
Sure. Well, you know, when you talk about the so-called normalization, say, Mohsen Abbas, what's key here, and it hasn't really been answered, and maybe you can help us in explaining this to us, is that one of the angles behind and the initiative behind this was to have Israel establish the so-called normalization, try to get these Persian Gulf Arab countries to entertain that, so that the U.S. wouldn't have to be as actively involved in the region, because then Israel's security would be somewhat established by these, well, whichever countries opted to do so, even though it hasn't really been entertained as much as I think they anticipated. Is that a correct reading into it?
I think we're all aware that the nations that we regard as the Gulf Cooperation Council, for instance, whether it's Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, we can name Saudi Arabia within that as well, the UAE. These forces or these entities have been established by the Anglo-Zionist Empire. They owe their establishment, the leaders owe their positions of power to the Western powers. And ever since their inception, they've been in the pockets of basically the Anglo-Zionist money mafia. And so essentially, they are tied at the hip with the interests of the West. And they do virtually everything in terms of their foreign policies, and I must say even their domestic and economic policies, which ultimately benefits the West. That doesn't help to really create a genuinely stable, conflict-free West Asia. Because, of course, if you're not interested in your own people's interest in regional trade, in increasing the regional trade, using the energy of the local region to help the world, if you're not really interested in having fraternal relationships or even military strategic alliances with your neighbors, that clearly means that you're missing out, for instance, on all sorts of economic benefits that could be there, which go beyond just oil and energy, relying on gas and oil, which is what those Gulf countries are doing. You're also destabilizing the region, and you're spending money on military and weapons, which you probably wouldn't have to. Now, the billions and billions of dollars which these Gulf countries pay to Lockheed Martin and all the sort of licenses for arms and weapons which the Americans and the United Kingdom and other Western countries are lavished with, ultimately benefit the West. They don't benefit these guys. They're sitting there, and every time they run out of these weapons or they get outdated, they go and buy some more. So basically, this relationship of milking the cows of that region has been going on by the West. And Iran is saying, look, you don't need to do this. You can save that money. You can diversify your economy. You can do more trade with your neighbors, especially ourselves. And as a result, there would be prosperity, peace, and automatic sort of harmony in the region. If only they could have the nerve and the courage to step away from their puppet status with Israel, okay, Tel Aviv, with Washington.
Right. Well, that's what I want to ask you, Muhammad Ali Araki, in terms of the most recent visit of the Chinese president to the region, which was to Saudi Arabia. Now, Mohsen Abbas talks about countries like Saudi Arabia that are tied to the hip when it comes to the West, in particular the U.S., obviously. But at the same time, we noticed how important now there's been a turn away, as it's been construed, of Saudi Arabia from the U.S., not completely, but we know the dissatisfaction and the tenseness that exists in that relationship. And it seems like, it doesn't seem like, it's very obvious that Saudi Arabia is turning to China in more ways than one, in particular when it comes to the oil card. Now, in this case in point, are we looking at a shift there, perhaps, of Saudi Arabia away from the U.S., and therefore we have on the other side of this how Iran is close to China also. So therefore, this both spells moves away from the U.S. Can it be construed that way? Something on which obviously we need to expand on more, because Iran's foreign minister talked about China in more ways than one after this visit. But what's your view on that?
Yes. So as I mentioned in the previous question that you asked about the meeting that will occur with the Persian Gulf countries, and that it will result in a shift, I believe that this will also result in a shift as well, because the relationship between Saudi Arabia and United States of America has become bitter in the current days, and the meeting of the Chinese official was a very important political message by Saudi Arabia to America and also the allies of China. And yes, we are looking at basically shift of power. And there's also one other thing I must mention, and that is the fact that when this shift occurs, there will also potentially be destabilization in the Persian Gulf countries and Saudi Arabia, because normally the United States of America, when they see that a country is not following their benefits, not in line with them, they would come and cause some so-called organic protests or chaos in the country. But again, the result of this shift, the reason to this shift that has occurred and is on the way of expansion occurring, is because of the fact that the United States of America and its allies are truly not trustworthy friends. Despite, yes, we know that the United States of America has a policy of milking the cow, but this sure will no longer work. Okay. And the reason to that is because they have proven that they're not good friends. They are trustworthy friends to Saudi Arabia, despite we completely disagree with many of the policies that the government of Saudi Arabia is implementing in the region.
Sure. Well, we need some explanation from you, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, when it comes to Iran vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia, in terms of how there are talks that have occurred. Iraq has been the mediator, but we know that that hasn't really bore the fruits that perhaps either side wanted. At this point, that door is still open. Even the Iranian foreign minister, Amir Abdollahian, at the Tehran Dialogue Forum, has said that we do want to open up our consulates. But at the end of his statement, he said, if Saudi Arabia chooses to take a constructive approach when it comes to Iran, what are we looking at when it comes down to Saudi Arabia and Iran and the region as a whole, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas?
Well, just in the last month, you can see that Saudi Arabia was involved in most of the social media tweeting, which was inciting riots and violence in the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is literally an occurrence that Saudi regime has been essentially part and parcel of the American color revolution destabilization efforts over the last month or two. We've seen that Saudi Arabia hasn't surrendered its policy in terms of oppressing Yemen, even though it was Iran at the beginning of this year whose initiative basically offered solutions, deal to end blockades in Yemen, to stop the war, and to create some rapprochement and harmony for the Saudis and for the Yemenis to get on with their lives without the kind of mass murders and killings that are going on through Saudi bombing, supplied, of course, by the Anglo-Zionist Empire with their arms as usual. So there are two bits of evidence to say the Saudis have shown no real sense of change. Okay, yes, we can take it on board that China has a huge, a future impact on that region, what with the Belt and Road Initiative and Iran's tie up with them, Iraq has tied up, the Saudis clearly don't want to be left behind, and there's a lot of jostling going on. The Chinese are playing a very wily diplomatic game as well, and they actually came down literally on the side of the Gulf Arab countries in terms of three islands that belong obviously to the Islamic Republic of Iran, and yet China added its signature to the notion of, you know, considering discussions. I mean, those are territorial issues which the Islamic Republic of Iran will not entertain. And if China did that to sweeten up the Saudis so that they would also buy into the Belt and Road Initiative, that's part of China's, of course, need for access to all of this region. But Iran won't buy into those. And if Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries continue to sort of challenge Iranian sovereignty, if they continue to be involved in color revolutions, if the Saudis continue to help finance ISIS offshoots along with the Americans, if they continue to try and destabilize that region with sectarian narratives, because we know that's been a major tool in trying to keep Iran, isolated. They've tried to make the Sunni fraternity across the Arab world and beyond actually dislike Iran and not engage with them at all. So these are not portents for a great relationship with Saudi Arabia anytime soon.
Sure. Well, I got, I think, four topics that I know we will not fit in the next few minutes left. Let's see. Let me go with Iraq with you on this, Mohammad Ali Araki, representative from Iraq at this Tehran Dialogue Forum said that Iraq cannot be used. He said many things which were actually quite incredible. But basically, we're looking at even the current prime minister of Iraq saying that Iraq cannot be used. Many Iraqi administrations have said that Iraq cannot be used as its soil to be used as a launching pad for attacks or any anti-government activities against the Islamic Republic. Tell us why he would say that, who he is referring to. In this case in point, we know that Iraq has talked about and Iran has actually come out with Iraq against Iraqi Kurdistan and the groups operating out of there, these terrorist groups, they need to put a stop to it. I think they have formed some kind of group that is monitoring those activities. But how important is that? Because that obviously is very important for Iran, and it does contribute to maintaining regional peace and security to stop those anti-Iran activities coming from Iraqi Kurdistan.
So when we're talking about this, we're talking about the national security of the Islamic Republic of Iran and including the neighbors of the Islamic Republic of Iran, because when the Kurdistan region of Iraq is unsafe and is a safe haven for the Zionists and other terrorists, this will have an impact on Iran and the other neighboring countries. So the Islamic Republic of Iran will not give in. And as we saw in the past few weeks, they did not give in. And they were very serious that if the necessary action was not taken, Iran will do what they see necessary. And so thankfully, what we saw was that Mr. Al-Sudani, after the visit he made to the Islamic Republic of Iran, he took the case seriously, and now we witness that there have been troops deployed by the Iraqi government to enter that border in order to clamp down on any potential threats that will target the Islamic Republic.
Sorry to jump in again for lack of time. I got to give Mohsen Abbas the last question here. On Ukraine, so Mohsen Abbas, Iran has said, we didn't want this war from the beginning. We didn't agree with it, that is. And he said that Iran can even provide means for such a dialogue. Coming from Iran, in terms of this summit, the Tehran Dialogue Forum, and its promotion of peace, tell us your thoughts of Iran on Ukraine war, and how can Iran be construed as a bad actor if it's all about peace? In about 30, 40 seconds.
Well, first of all, Iran was part of a message delivery service, if you like, the foreign minister, to the Russian foreign minister on behalf of a European nation, where they proposed a kind of peace deal around Ukraine, or the beginning of discussion around a peace deal. It was intimated that Macron, Francis Macron, was behind that, but the Iranians participated. If we look at Iran regionally, and this is a summary, really, look, they tried to help with peace in Afghanistan. They've offered all their services to continue to be a peaceful. They've tried in the Azerbaijani dispute with Armenia, peace brokers, in Yemen, in all of the region that they've tried their utmost.
They must continue
their effort and try their best to push this, even though their enemies are going to do their best to break up those efforts.
Sorry, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, fresh out of time. Thank you so much, journalist and political commentator. Mehmet Ali Araki, thank you, journalist and political analyst, both from London. Thank you so much. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitavle and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Faftah bayni wa baynahum fathan wa najjini wa man ma'ya minal mu'minin.
Then judge between me and them with decisive judgment, and save me and those with me of the believers.
فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُ وَمَنْ مَعَهُ فِي الْفُلْكِ الْمَشْحُونَ
So we saved him and those with him in the laden ship.
ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ
Then we drowned thereafter the remaining ones.
Dear brothers and sisters, we have reached these verses of chapter Shu'ara to be discussed. فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُ وَمَنْ مَعَهُ فِي الْفُلْكِ الْمَشْحُونَ ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَةً وَمَا كَانَ أَكْثَرُهُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ So we delivered him and those with him in the laden ark. Then we drowned the rest afterwards. Verily in that is a sign, but most of them do not believe. And also the 122nd verse, وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ And verily, your Lord, He is the Mighty, the Merciful. Now, as we explained in the previous episode, the grace of Allah came to help Noah after he somehow engaged in the invocation And the Almighty Allah saved him and his followers because he had prayed for himself and the followers to be saved and delivered from these unbelievers. Now, the grace of Allah comes to Noah, and on the other hand, the punishment is coming to annihilate the rejectors. So the Quran says, "ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ." Then we drowned the rest afterwards. Now, at the end of the explanation, after all these ups and downs of the story of Prophet Noah, Quran repeats the same words which were mentioned at the end of the story of Moses and Abraham, عَلَى نَبِيِّنَا وَآلِهِ وَعَلَيْهِمَ السَّلَامِ. It implies that in the circumstance of the event of Noah and his constant invitation to the truth, his patience, and finally the destiny of his opponents who were drowned and destroyed, there is a sign for all mankind. This is the kind that Almighty Allah treats with the people in the universe. Verily, in that there is a sign. إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَةٌ وَمَا كَانَ أَكْثَرُهُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. But most of them do not believe.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So this is how Almighty Allah treats the people in the universe. This is a sunnah, this is a tradition, that if you depart your way from the way of the Prophet, if you stay away from the truth, you will be eventually drowned, destroyed, etc. Therefore, the Prophet ﷺ, based on all these stories, the stories of Moses, Abraham, and Prophet Noah, should not be upset from the aversion. He should not be upset about the obstinacy of the pagans among his people. He must persevere for his destiny and that of his companions, because it is like the destiny of Noah and his followers, and the fate of the disbelievers is the same fate that those drowned people had. This is what happens to the people. And this is not out of the mercy that the Almighty Allah is giving some respite for the unbelievers. This, for the unbelievers, is only adding their burden of sins. In the end, the verse says, "And verily your Lord, He is the Mighty, the Merciful." وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ. His mercy requires that He gives them chance and respites them with enough time and completes the argument at first, and His might causes you at last to be victorious and to make them encounter defeat. So, as a result, if He subhanahu wa ta'ala gives respite to the disbelievers, it is eventually because of His mercy, not for the existence of any weakness in Him. He is not weak to be delaying the chastisement of the disbelievers. He is giving them some time so they might return to Him. And this is out of His mercy. But for the ones who are still obstinate, this respite, this time given to them, adds them nothing but chastisement. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always, but for me, worry ends when faith begins.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
This is a part of political divine will of the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. To safeguard Islam itself is the most important obligations all great prophets, from His Holiness Adam, peace be upon him, to His Holiness Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, have strived and sacrificed for the protection of the concept of Islam. No deterrent ever stopped them from fulfilling this great obligation.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and in this program, we try to have a profound reading of Imam Khomeini's precious words and speeches. Well, about the subject of ethics and spirituality, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said that if mankind is self-constructed and perfected, everything will come out as spiritual. even the materialistic will become spiritual. Well, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, through this sentence is talking about the elevated level of human soul and its importance. Spirituality in Islam is the elevation of the human condition to a level where the mind is focused on the higher and non-materialistic realities of a godly existence. In the 79th verse of Surah Al-Imran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commands people to be rabbaniyin, or devoted servants to God. The message in this verse is to value spirituality more than worldly pleasure. What Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is referring to is the very same issue. When one experiences the spiritual pleasure of doing good to himself or others, the pleasure is so much that it can never be compared to materialistic pleasure. Welcome back, dear audience. You're listening to Spring of the Truth. We're talking about the spirituality and its importance in human beings' life and level of elevation. Well, spirituality has three major elements in Islam, and they are purification, remembrance, and prayer. The first is purification of the soul. In that regard, the 9th verse of Surah Ash-Shams declares that, "And by the soul and what made it perfected and inspired its evilness and piety, surely the one who has purified it is successful, and surely the one who has corrupted it has failed." So we can see that purification means self-practice and self-building from Islamic point of view. Remembrance of God when one is up to an evil action or at any time is another element. Remembrance or dhikr can be performed at any time and any place. It can be done in many forms, either said by lips or just thoughts of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is while prayer or salat has to be performed at certain times and under certain conditions of piety. And by doing all the suggested recommendations of our holy book of Quran, the infallible imams and the great religious scholars, just like Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, one can work on the spiritual aspects of him or herself and reach the real pleasure of servanthood.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The first Iranian-made particle accelerator.
The high-tech device produces high-energy beams by accelerating electrons close to the speed of light. Developed by Iran's Nuclear Science and Technology Research Institute, the Dynamitron-type accelerator was unveiled at the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran on Saturday.
We aim to generate 20% of the country's electricity from nuclear energy and the use of radiation technology. We focused on various accelerators and radiation systems, which can serve a wide range of needs in society. It's a technology that improves the health sector and can be used in food security and environmental preservation.
The Iranian accelerator will be used for food irradiation, cable and wire manufacturing, tire industries, sewage treatment, and sterilization of medical devices. The AEOI says the machine will also be employed in treating cancer patients.
The applications of this technology are numerous, but compared to developed countries, we have stepped into the field of particle accelerators about 50 years later. In fact, we have possessed this technology for a long time, but it was limited to research purposes.
Particle accelerators were first invented in the 1960s to study high-energy particle collisions, but it didn't take scientists long to notice their byproduct, and that is an extremely bright light that can be used in investigating the structure of crystals and proteins, monitoring air pollution, studying disease mechanisms, HD imaging, and cancer radiation therapy, among other applications.
With a wide range of applications, from medicine to agriculture, the homegrown accelerator, as put by its developers, will transform different industries in Iran. Experts here say for sanctions hit Iran, building such a high-tech device is more than an achievement, but a miracle. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Afghan people have been calling for transparent and impartial investigations into crimes and wrongdoings by NATO forces on their soil. Among them, relatives of victims of the NATO war in southern Helmand province are demanding justice for the killing of 54 unarmed people by British Special Air Service troops there. The dead include children. Afghans want the murderers should be held accountable.
Helmand province witnessed deadly night raids and airstrikes by NATO forces, especially those of the UK. Besides, civilian captives were tortured and shot dead. In one case, children were thrown off military planes. I remember so many atrocities by the foreign forces in which civilians were harmed. We call for those British and American perpetrators to be tried in an impartial and transparent court. They should be brought to account and victims should receive compensation.
However, the UK government has announced the start of an inquiry into wrongdoings by its forces in Afghanistan, but some experts say only transparent probes by independent bodies can help make headway with the case. They believe investigations by foreign governments could cover up the facts about the gross violations at the hands of their forces in Afghanistan. During the two-decade US invasion, Afghanistan witnessed much disgrace by NATO troops. More and more facts are emerging regarding unlawful killings and gross violations by foreign forces on Afghan soil. The U.S. war on Afghanistan has left many Afghans in great suffering. People here are calling for accountability and justice for years of gross violation by the NATO troops. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Family members of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and thousands of their supporters remembered those 158 mostly young people whose lives were taken in a crowd crush October 29th. Some read letters to their lost loved ones.
Last year, we made a whole bunch of snow ducks all around outside our apartment. Please come and see me in my dreams sometimes. Please come see me someday. Maybe even as my future child. I love you forever, Seon.
Although tens of thousands were gathered, police did not manage the crowds and ignored emergency calls hours before the deadly crush. Among those who perished in the tragedy, 26 of them were foreigners. Five of those were Iranian. And like many of the young people who died that evening, they were students who visited South Korea to get more experience in the world and primarily more education to better themselves. Victims' families want the truth and those responsible brought to justice. A class action lawsuit is suing the government, which has often deflected responsibility and blamed the victims. It reminds some of the ferry sinking in 2014, in which more than 300 people died.
The law should be a law to punish wrong people, but the government is humiliating, insulting, and degrading the victims and the families of the deceased. In the end, I think this happened because the Sewol ferry accident was not properly resolved.
Tonight marked the 49th day since the tragedy, signifying the end of the mourning period, when the spirit of those dead to be reborn reaches Buddha and bliss. Frank Smith, Seoul.
It's a daybreak. Raju Yadav is piling up his stock for the delivery in the retail market. He's delighted, saying markets are picking good pace and prices in the whole markets are not fluctuating since last quarter. Earlier, I would buy limited stock, he says. But since the prices are consistent and demand is satisfactory, I have bought more stock than usual. I'm testing my luck, he says. Many Indians like Raju are optimistic as the country is picking up pace as the fast-growing major economy.
We are not strictly a very heavily exporting nation. Most of our producers actually rely on our domestic market. But exports are important for us because we do import some very critical commodities.
Experts say with COVID outbreak shaking major economies, India maintained its consistency in almost all sectors except the manufacturing and employment, which they say is like a diesel engine and needs a major boost. Many economic experts say investments are flowing smoothly in the world's second most populous nation, adding the country needs to revitalize its manufacturing sector, job creation, and address bottlenecks in power, mining, and infrastructure.
More than the economy, I would say our problem, what the manufacturing sector can boost is good jobs, you know, which all Indians will agree are lacking in India. I mean, that's why so many of us go abroad, right? Because these good jobs are lacking, we are wasting our talent. And the reason is that we have never seriously thought about how to make manufacturing grow.
India growth forecast is projected at 7% despite turbulent markets and war in Ukraine that shook markets. Based on Morgan Stanley and S&P Global, the country is projected to overtake Japan and Germany to become the third largest economy by 2030. Economic experts say trade tensions between the United States and China will also open up new opportunities for India as the companies are considering India for production capacity as a second option. Many, however, argue India needs double-digit growth, which would be vital for the second most populous nation, where a huge workforce and young professionals join the market every year, besides lifting millions out of poverty. While the coronavirus pandemic ravaged the world's economy, India managed to mitigate the impact of the outbreak, mainly by relying on its domestic market. But experts say the economic growth is expected to fall in the coming months as the country grapples with high inflation, rising unemployment, and a spike in oil prices, and also a threat of global economic recession. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Protests through Brussels on Friday was organized by Belgium's three largest unions. They claim the country's federal government and EU authorities are failing to adequately help citizens during the current escalating cost of living crisis. Many also question how the EU is able to set aside at least 20 billion euro for Ukraine in 2023.
We are all against this war because it's about imperialism, it's about money. There's more behind. It's not only about Ukraine and about Russia.
Ukraine is a key point, but our people here as well. And the money is there. People have to be taxed properly, especially the 1%.
It's important to help the Ukrainians, but what about the people here in Europe and in Belgium?
The EU's energy sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have backfired. Oil, gas, diesel, petrol, and electricity prices are through the roof. Inflation across the eurozone is running at 10%. However, wages are not going up.
Many people can't buy the good food. Many people can't pay for our apartment.
Landlords are taking advantage from the inflation to
raise the rents.
Landlords will now have another excuse. The European Central Bank increased interest rates by a half of 1% on Thursday.
And based on the substantial upward revision to the inflation outlook, we expect to raise them further.
The national strike on Friday resulted in flight cancellations, according to Brussels Airport. There were also major disruptions to tram, bus and metro services. Union members, not just here in Belgium, but across the EU, are warning of protests throughout 2023, which will impact public services, unless their cost of living concerns are addressed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The people providing the nation with care, asking to be looked after by the authorities. Some of the tens of thousands of UK nurses who have walked off their jobs demanding better pay and conditions. Lakshmi has worked for the NHS for 22 years.
Shortages of nurses have led to less staff, and you can't care for people if you don't have a staff to care for. So it's person safety mainly, and if here comes, obviously people are leaving profession due to unfair pays, overworked, stressed, and shortage of staff.
Hailed as heroes during the pandemic, nurses up and down the country, Save Scotland, are staging two 12-hour strikes this week and next. Their representative body, the Royal College of Nursing, says they had no choice when the government rejected calls for talks on NHS pay. The RCN says nurses are 20% worse off in real terms today than they were in 2010. Due to successive below-inflation pay rewards.
Things have gotten so bad that hospitals, one in four hospitals, are having to set up food banks for nurses and for other staff. This is unprecedented. But we're not just fighting for pay, we're fighting for the survival of the NHS.
One reason for that concern is the number of staff leaving the profession. 25,000 nursing staff have quit the NHS in the past year. The government says the demand for a 19% pay rise is not affordable. The unions argue the money is there. The nurses' strike is part of a wave of industrial action sweeping the UK this year, with the strikers demanding better pay and conditions as a worsening cost of living crisis pushes more and more people into dire straits.
The unions are warning that the strikes this month could be the beginning of a longer period of action if governments refuse formal pay negotiations or if future talks do not result in satisfactory outcomes. Saeed Pourreza, London.
The Saudi-led coalition has once again detained two fuel ships, preventing them from reaching the crucial western port of Hodeidah. The Yemeni Petroleum Company says the two fuel vessels were detained despite obtaining the necessary permits and being cleared from inspection in the port of Djibouti.
Preventing fuel ships from entering Yemen continues to take its toll on the country's battered economy. It has led to an increase in food prices and basic supplies and has made life harder for the Yemeni people as Saudi Arabia continues its blockade.
Rashid Al-Haddad, an economic expert, says the seizure of the fuel ships is just one of many war tactics employed by the Saudi-led coalition to put pressure on the Yemeni people.
The Saudi aggression is always exerting effort to make life difficult for all Yemenis by depriving them of fuel resources. 70% of fuel enters the country through the port of Hodeidah, which affects 22 million people. The Saudi-led coalition is using this as a war tactic, not against Ansarullah, but against the Yemeni people as a collective punishment.
Considering the expected rise in shipping prices, Dalal, a local fruit merchant, says he will be forced to raise his prices if no fuel enters the country.
This watermelon is normally sold for 1,500 Yemeni riyals when fuel is available. However, whenever they prevent fuel from entering Yemen, the price of this watermelon increases from 1,500 to 3,000 Yemeni riyals.
This blockade has caused an economic crisis. The price of wheat and fuel have increased. We don't have anything and we're not even being paid salaries. We're besieged from all aspects of life.
The Yemeni government says the illegal seizure of Yemeni oil is an act of war and a violation of Yemen's sovereignty, which will be met with force if continued. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
As they came together for a summit in Brussels, EU leaders were acutely aware that energy storage tanks will run dry in the coming months. There are still major divisions in the EU over a gas price.